Good afternoon. We'll have a similar pattern this afternoon as we had in the morning. That is, we'll have some orienting overview on equanimity and basic instructions, and then we'll have a sustained period of practice. Actually, this time I think we'll have two periods of walking, back and forth, sitting, walking, sitting, walking, and then we'll have a time at the end for a little bit more discussion, further focus on bringing it into daily life. Okay, so a few words about equanimity. Probably a word that most of us hardly use in English, right? That it's translation of the word upekkha, which is usually translated as balance. And there really are two senses of equanimity that are relevant for our practice. One is more as part of insight practice, and that's where equanimity especially means ability to be with what's happening with non-reactivity. And that's a quality of our mindfulness practice, that we can be present and be balanced with what comes through our experience, whether difficult or neutral or really cool. Right, and that the equanimity means that whatever comes by, we can stay balanced and see clearly. And as such, equanimity is a pretty advanced capacity in terms of the expression of wisdom. It's actually pretty close to freedom and liberation. It's the ability to be present. Things come by, whatever they are. We see them clearly, we notice, and presumably we can respond skillfully, and nothing too much knocks us off our center. That's equanimity. And it's an advanced capacity, and it's listed in a lot of the teaching lists that the Buddha gave. It's always the last one. It's the end of the list. In other words, it's the end of the paramis, some of you may know, the list of the 10 qualities that we're to develop. Another list is the 7 factors of awakening. It's the last of those, right? And so it's an advanced capacity connected very much with wisdom. And we practice in all sorts of ways to develop that equanimity, and there are complexities about it, which I'll get to in a moment. And there's also equanimity as a heart practice, as one of the Brahma-vihara, one of the divine abodes. And there, equanimity brings in especially the wisdom connection, or the wisdom dimension, I should say, and connects it with the kind heart, compassion, and so forth. The other three of the Brahma-vihara, loving kindness, compassion, and joy, are more obviously qualities of the heart. Equanimity isn't so obviously a quality of the heart, right? Sounds like kind of just being balanced and perhaps a little bit aloof, right? Sitting on a mountain being equanimous, you know, and so forth. And so equanimity as a quality of the heart is a little bit different. And one image that many of us use is the idea of the wise grandmother who has seen everything, and yet she's still really warm and kind, right? But there's a wisdom there. That would be the equanimity related to the heart. And so in these four in this practice of these four qualities, equanimity brings in that wisdom dimension and helps to connect the wisdom with the other three. In the Tibetan tradition, when they practice these four qualities, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity, they practice equanimity first because they want to start with wisdom before they do too much else. It's interesting, right? And I once did a 4-week retreat just on these four qualities. And I started out it was interesting. I did 2 days of equanimity, then 1 week of metta, loving kindness, 1 week of compassion, 1 week of joy, and I finished with 5 days of equanimity. But it was interesting to start at the beginning with equanimity as a way of orienting. So it brings in the wisdom factor. And maybe I'll just say a little bit more about equanimity in general, because the insight meditation quality of equanimity is related to the heart quality. We could say that the factor of equanimity in cultivating wisdom in insight meditation is about developing balance and clear seeing no matter what happens. And in the equanimity in the grouping of the heart practices gets much more integrated, that quality of wisdom and clear seeing and balance gets much more integrated with the heart. And with, like, in that image of the grandmother, but also in the sense that it's much clearer, and this is really clear in some of the teachings, that these four qualities get interwoven with each other. So equanimity, to be mature, has to have kindness and compassion in it. In other words, it's not aloof. Some of you know that these four heart qualities in the teachings, there's a teaching of what's called the near enemies, sometimes called the near opposites or the near misses. And this is where something that looks like one of these qualities is a little bit off. There's some of the genuine quality, but it's a little bit off. So loving kindness, the near enemy would be where the kindness and warmth become possessive or have attachment in them. Okay, there's some genuine stuff there, but there's the distortion of it being grabby, of possessive, and so forth. The near enemy of compassion is pity. So there's some warmth there, but in the pity, there's a sense of I'm better than you. And we're at a different place, right? So that's a distortion. The near enemy of joy is a kind of inflation around the joy. Oh, things are so cool, you know, and basically getting overly attached to the joy. The near enemy of equanimity is indifference. So you're kind of missing the heart qualities. In other words, you have some balance, but you're not really connected. Could be somewhat distanced. And so that would be the, and in one of the ways that we purify when we do these practices is that we work through these near enemies. So we, in terms of the morning, we would work through a possessive or attached quality to the kindness, you know, which could be there when we try to bring kindness to people we think should improve in certain ways, right? That would be a kind of attached quality. Remember I said, you know, may you get it together, you know, or may you really develop in these, actually in these three qualities, which I have been compiling a list for you, and here they are, develop in these three qualities and you will be, in my eyes, okay, right? So that would, you know, we would work through that. And so similarly, with equanimity, we would look out for it getting a little bit distanced or overly cool, or another way to say it, disconnected from kindness, disconnected from compassion. And that is sometimes what happens with equanimity, you know, that it can... I was interested when I was writing this book called The Engaged Spiritual Life, I was very interested in the quality of equanimity as part of what spiritual activists had, right? Because they all had tremendous, you know, the people I interviewed and the people whose lives I studied, they had a lot of balance, right? They would have hard things happen and they would be pretty centered, right? They seemed to be pretty centered. It seemed to be a capacity. But they were also responsive. You know, they were not indifferent. They were deeply, you know, equanimity was something that involves being responsive and acting, which is not sometimes in our usual sense of it. It can be a little bit distanced or, again, indifferent and so forth. So equanimity is balanced. It's ultimately, in a way, unshakable. No matter what happens, we can still stay balanced. You know, not too much can not. When we have highly developed equanimity, not too much knocks us around. Here's one of my favorite expressions of equanimity. This is from the Japanese haiku writer Basho. This is, I think, an equanimity haiku. So it's very short, so listen carefully. Fleas, lice, the horse pissing near my pillow. That's it.
I missed the beginning.
Again?
Yes.
Fleas, lice, the horse pissing near my pillow. I'm saying that partly because it's helpful to wake people up after after lunch. But fleas.
Fleas.
Fleas. Did I pronounce that wrong? Fleas. Fleas. A lot of the haiku that I found that seemed to be at equanimity were about fleas. Issa wrote a lot of haikus. These are two flea haikus from him. So I mean, maybe what's the nature of that? What makes that equanimity? It's that he was describing things that could be irritating or uncomfortable, very matter-of-factly, right? Just fleas, lice, the horse pissing near my pillow. No commentary, right? Just the facts, ma'am. Right? And so here are two from Issa about fleas. I'm sorry it's so small, but please do practice your jumping. Fleas of the house. A little bit subtle. You know. I'm sorry, he's referring to the house as being small. I'm sorry it's so small, but please do practice your jumping, fleas of the house. I don't know, I'm not sensing a lot of resonance with that one. But I really think it's a good one. Okay, and then here's the last one. He's about to take a trip to a famous a place in Japan called Matsushima. And he says, "Now you fleas, you shall see Matsushima. Off we go." Okay. Okay, so there's that sense of balance, and I like that very much. And sense of insight. And so... In the equanimity practice, as a heart practice, we have a kind of steadiness of warmth and kindness and being there no matter what happens. And in particular, the phrases develop more of a sense of balance no matter what happens to the different beings we wish well for. So, for example, my equanimity phrase, and typically the equanimity phrases are just one or two. We don't have four. And so if you look at the sheet, you'll see They're just a few. And so the one that I use, for example, is near the end. No matter what I wish for, things are as they are. No matter what I wish for, things are as they are. And so I might, in the morning, do metta, and I say, I wish this for you. I wish this for you. In our metta, we're wishing, may this happen. May you develop here. May you be wise. May you be happy. And then I come around with equanimity and say, no matter what I wish for, things are as they are. It's like, I wish for this. No matter what you wish for, kid, things are as they are. Right? It's like, there's what we would call a paradoxical tension. But it's actually, the caring is not gone. It's just saying, I can stay balanced whatever happens. And I still, it doesn't say stop wishing. It doesn't say stop caring. It's more or less, I care and things are as they are. Right? So it's really a kind of a way to balance out that the other three. And we have to find the phrases that work for us. That might appear to you maybe to be a little harsh. Does that feel a little harsh to some people?
Yeah,
it can be. So you want to find what works for you. The traditional phrase is one that I don't use, but some people do. That's where it brings in the concept of karma, which is, I think, actually hasn't fully made it to the West. It's really... For some people, it's seen as a problem. And here we say, you are the heir or owner of your own karma. Your happiness and unhappiness depend on your actions, not so much on my wishes for you. So it's basically saying something similar to the other one. It's saying, I can wish for you, but your deep happiness ultimately depends on how you live your life. So it's kind of reminding us that. And it goes along with the sense of warmth and kindness. So there are other ways, other phrases we might use. All beings meet their joys and sorrows according to a lawful nature. Things are just as they are. May I accept things just as they are. May I be undisturbed by the comings and goings of events. I wish you happiness, but cannot make your choices for you. No matter how I might wish things to be otherwise, things are as they are. Self as I am, things as they are. And another one that some people use is, I have my path, you have your path, and I care about you. In other words, you have your own momentum of your life, I have the momentum of my life, and I care. So that's more asserting the link between the wisdom dimension and the heart. Right? And so again, there's room to develop your own phrase here. I would recommend choosing one of these, and we can work with a similar technique. You can have an image of the person. And generally, we direct the same phrase to different beings, kind of referring to them. So if I use my phrase, no matter what I wish for, things are as they are, I can be referring to myself, to my benefactor, to my friend. The implicit is, let's say I'm in terms of my friend, no matter what I wish for you, things are as they are. And often when I practice this, my own experience is something like this. Like I'm wishing for someone who I feel very warmly towards. No matter what I wish for, things are as they are. And something comes up, maybe that's not going so well for the person. And I just sit with it for 5 seconds and something... and it's kind of most evident with me. No matter what I wish for me, things are as they are. And what comes to mind is something, again, maybe that's I'm not so happy about. And it's kind of like I say, no matter what I wish for, things are as they are. And I stay with that for a few seconds. And actually something happens in that process. It's like that being with what's difficult and holding it, something matures, something gets learned. Yeah. I can remember when my mother was still alive doing equanimity practice with her. And at the time, she was in her 80s, and I knew that she wouldn't live forever. And I would do the equanimity practice, no matter what I wish for, things are as they are. And then it would come to me, she will die. And I would just sit with that. That would come up. I'd be with it for a while, and I'd go back and do it again. Right? And something wasn't entirely pleasant, of course, but something got learned in the process. Right? I was like, okay, this is part of life. You can't ignore it or keep on forgetting it, right? Or deny it, right? So that would be an example. So maybe last thing to say is that the traditional sequence is a little bit different. We start with a neutral person because for most of us, it's not so hard to be equanimous about a neutral person, right? Although you may have got, how many people found with a neutral person, you started to get really fond of the neutral person? Yeah, that can happen. That's what, when I've sometimes, when I've done my retreats at Spirit Rock and done loving kindness with the neutral person, I would, it didn't take long for it to be, I would, in the dining hall, I would look for the neutral person. I'd try to sometimes sit near the neutral person. And pretty soon, I'm far from neutral, which is kind of the idea, right? It's interesting. As someone who was once neutral, you bring the heart to it, not so neutral. Interesting. Okay. So, but we start with the neutral person, and then we go down the list. I think the order is not quite so important. You can see we have self near the end. Okay. So we'll do the sequence, go through a few of these. And again, the practice is just finding one of the phrases that works for you. We're going to do metta first to kind of warm it up. And I recommend, if you're doing equanimity practice, to do some metta first, or it could be also compassion or joy. In other words, do one of the heart practices other than equanimity first, at least for a few minutes, 5 minutes. One of my Tibetan teachers, Mingyur Rinpoche, said, when you do practices, different practices in proximity to each other, they mingle. So that's what we're looking for. We're looking for the mingling of metta and equanimity, right? Or the mingling of the kind heart and wisdom. Okay. So, and again, there's room to make up your own phrase, but if you're newer to this, I'd recommend choosing one of these. Any questions before we get going? Unless are you okay with the mic, Corey? You need a little after lunch exercise.
I'm a little confused about applying equanimity to specific people as opposed to just wanting equanimity in all circumstances.
Excuse me?
I'm a little confused about.
I heard the first part, yeah.
As opposed to wanting equanimity and wishing for it myself in all circumstances. I don't understand the focusing toward individuals.
Yeah, we're cultivating equanimity in terms of what happens to different beings. And the second way that you framed it, may I develop equanimity in different parts of my life, that would actually be more of a metaphrase, because we're wishing something good for us. And so here, we're actually manifesting equanimity. We're not wishing for equanimity. We're inviting equanimity through the phrases.
With a specific person in mind.
With a specific person in mind. We can use the same phrases. Again, if you develop them different, you can say the person's name if that's helpful. But like when I say, no matter what I wish for, things are as they are, I use that phrase, but I'm referring to a particular person or being.
Thank you.
Thanks for that. That was clarifying. Thank you. Any other questions? Just clarification of the practice? Vera up front.
Why does it feel so depressing?
What's that?
Why does it feel so depressing? It feels so,
can't think of a word, like giving up, like hopeless.
Like what?
After lunch?
No, it just feels depressing. It feels, I've just never thought of equanimity this way.
Yeah.
It feels more, it's not just accepting, I don't know why, it just feels like it's depressing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's remember that it goes hand in hand with all the other three, for one thing, and it's connected with responsiveness and action. But this is kind of, in a way, this is a little bit of a corrective to the first three. And it's a kind of balancing. For you, it would be the question of, can I have a phrase which has life for me and doesn't feel overly sad? So you could either make one up. What we're looking for here is basically it's some understanding that my well-being or your well-being is happening for all sorts of reasons. And that's what we're getting in touch with. We're getting in touch with that sense that there are causes and conditions related to my happiness. So there are causes and conditions related to my well-being, my happiness, these things going well, getting what I want, etc. Same thing for others. And with equanimity, we're tuning into that sense of there being causes and conditions which are my wishes can't all change, right? In other words, it's a little bit like what the St. Francis prayer, grant me the capacity to know what I can change and what I can't change. And equanimity is more like the latter. But it, actually, that I said that does, that's not quite right the way I said it, because it's like, this is what's happening, this is the way life is unfolding, and I can wish for happiness, I can act, I can respond. So that's why I'm saying it's valuable to always to do this after we do some metta. Does that help clear it a little bit?
Okay.
Yeah, and it might be also to see a phrase which works better for you. You could just say, you know, things are happening according to causes and conditions, right? That's both for good and for bad, right? That seems, when I say that, that seems a little more neutral, doesn't it? Okay. But I'm sure that's shared by others too, you know, in a sense. Yeah.
So I go back to the T.S. Eliot thing you said earlier, which seems to kind of have both in it. And I wonder if part of this is sort of saying, I can do what I can do, and I have no control. Because what I can find in the metta often is wishing it to the point where I'm attached
to
the outcome, and this sort of helps relax.
That's right, because I think that's helpful to understand that this, in a sense, doesn't stand on its own. It goes along with what we did in the morning, and that's important. So you said it very nicely, that I can wish well, I can express warmth, I can give support, and I don't have total control over what happens. Right. I may like to think, because one of the things that happens with when we do metta is we wish well for another person, and the person isn't doing like we said this person should do, right? But that's happening for reasons, right? And so I think the way you said it is nice. Like it's important for me to be caring, kind, in both my heart and in my actions, and I don't have total control. And that's what the equanimity is bringing out. And so here, and so again, there may be some use in finding phrases which are, maybe are really get at that maybe a little more skillfully than some of the things on the list here, which I think was, that was sort of, that's what you were responding to. So what would, you know, even, that's a little bit expressed in the last one. I have my path, you have your path, and I care about you.
Yeah.
Right? That one brings that out a little more fully, right? Mm-hmm. So it could be, I want, you know, I care about you, and I will do what I can, and things will occur as they occur. You know, anyone have any better language on that? Yeah. Okay.
So this is slightly different. I don't know if it would help. It helps me to think of it not as a noun, but to think of it more as a verb or as an adverb. That is, I am working toward equanimity. It's not a state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or it's an adverb that describes a situation or an action. Anyhow, having that kind of movement in it works better for me than accepting that I'm equanimous about non-equanimity or something.
Yeah, I think you're pointing to the way that this is very personal. We have to see what really works for us. But it's some sense of... yeah, like the T.S. Eliot quote, ours is in the trying, the rest is not our business. We can care, we want to try, act, and at a certain point we have to let things go rather than think we can control things. That's the spirit here. So what art's going to suggest some phrases that might work for,
Not, really, this is more of a quote from Ajahn Sumedho.
Okay.
Not a phrase per se, but...
Okay. Yeah.
It's not so much directed toward another person. But I mean, even the equanimity phrases, we aren't saying them for the other person so much. We're really saying it so that we can have equanimity around not getting an outcome, say, for our metta phrases.
Yeah, that's helpful. Yeah, that's a good distinction. Because it may relate to Vera's question that we could say, now here we're referring... to other beings and then to ourself, and we're saying things are like this, right? And but so we're saying that, and we might what might come to, you know, when I do that often, what comes to mind is something that I wish wasn't like this, right? And I kind of sit with a while, but we could say I'm thinking of my mentor. Things are like this, and you know, my mind can go different places, you know. But you're right, we're not wishing for something for the mentor. We're wanting ourselves to be balanced with things being like this. So that's helpful.
And then I can turn it towards whatever is kind of happening in my mind and heart at the time.
Yeah, you can turn it towards different beings.
Like this.
Yeah.
Sleepiness is like this.
Yeah.
And it can kind of create a larger container of holding.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, the equanimity could be is part of our mindfulness practice, and there would be, oh, sleepiness is like this. Let me look at it. And that'd be more of an insight practice if we say, things are this moment is like this, and I refer to my mentor. Again, we just say the phrase and see what happens. That's what the idea is. But we're cultivating equanimity in ourselves, in relationship to the other. It's a little more of a subtle practice than the metta. Metta morning was so easy and simple, right? Just kindness, huh? Okay, please, question? Yeah.
After listening about equanimity, and is it always toward others? Because creates in me like an inside fight or an issue between if it's towards me, if it's limited towards me, is it feeling that this is what it is, just it's like settling for something and resigning the power that I have to create my own reality.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that, that we all have
yeah.
the power to create our own reality.
Yeah.
It depends on us.
Yeah.
But but I also think that equanimity applying to others, it's also respecting what they are creating for them. So it kind of matches and it makes me feel like good
yeah.
when I'm feeling it inside. But then if I try to turn the mirror to myself, it's like, then I am just, does it imply to resign my power of saying, okay, things are like this now, but what do I want to create? But I have to settle for this because
yeah, yeah. That's a helpful distinction that we effectively, and this may be another possible phrase, we're saying things are like this and I will respond skillfully. That would be an equanimity phrase. Things are like this, and I will respond and be creative in my response. That's a new one. It's a new equanimity phrase. I'm going to write it down.
Say it again.
However you say it, things are like this, and I will respond creatively. I think that's really, the first brings out more of the equanimity. And the second brings out the responsive nature of equanimity, which we often don't see, right? So that's helpful. So again, in the last phrase on the sheet, I care about you, sort of again, there's some creative response. But and that might be really key for you, Vera, if we really have that, you know, so we can have two phrases. The first is more the, okay, I can be balanced with things as they are, and I will respond creatively and skillfully. I think that's a great phrase. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. How many? That was a cool one. That's very good. Yeah. So that got at it, didn't it, Vera? Did that feel helpful?
Yeah, that helps a lot. Thank you.
Yeah. Great. So this is community wisdom. Okay. And there was one more hand up. Was it Liz? Did you have?
I think I'm just repeating.
Okay, we don't need to do that.
it's just, may I is metta for me. So may I accept things just as they are, may I be undisturbed, that's metta condition. I think we've all said this, and then no matter how much I might wish things to be otherwise, things are as they are, as I get from it.
Yeah. I think may I accept things, the may I can be with an equanimity phrase. It's, yeah, I mean, there. I don't know if there's some absolute distinction, but again, let me have it be a pragmatic criterion, do what works for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and what helps to have that sense of
may
balance.
May I brings in this feeling of, oh God, am I going to really be able to do it? Am I skillful enough? Am I wise enough? Work,
okay.
No matter, things are as they are. I just have to.
Okay, yeah, just.
It's in my own.
Yeah, just do what works.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think this is important because in my teaching experience, when we do a session on a retreat on equanimity, sometimes we have, like in the afternoons, we do one day metta, next day compassion, next day joy, next day equanimity. There are about 10 times as many questions on equanimity as there are on the others. Right. So I think that was very good. I think it was very creative. I was feeling fairly equanimous that we would come to a good resolution. And I think it really was. Especially you singled out an issue, which I'm sure many people felt, not at all just you. And then we came around, I think it got crystallized at the end, you know, the way we said it at the end. So thank you. Okay, so we'll just do a short practice period now, okay? You okay for about 15 minutes more? Right now, and then we'll have walking and can use the bathrooms and so forth, okay? So we'll start with metta, wherever it works best for you, or I could also say however you'd like to practice metta. We'll do it for about 5 or 6 minutes, okay? A short period of metta. Now we'll begin with equanimity practice. So be with the phrase or phrases that you've chosen that work for you, as best you can tell now. It's fine to experiment a little bit. And we'll start with the equanimity practice in relationship to the neutral being. About 5 or 6 minutes here. Now we'll move to one of the first three categories, your choice, either self, benefactor, or friend. We'll just do that for 5 or 6 minutes. And just one suggestion that I I was experimenting with the phrase that we developed here. Things are like this, and I will respond creatively. I found it helpful to have a pause after things are like this, and to have a little pause there, and then to go on with the second part, and I will respond creatively. So we, in a way, sit with things, how things are, and then we add the other piece, so kind of make it more like a two-step, two phrases in a way. That's a suggestion. 20-minute walking period, and can stay with the more or less the same sequence that we just did. So that could be maybe 5 or 10, you know, maybe 1/3 metta, 1/3 equanimity practice with neutral person, and 1/3 with self, benefactor, or dear friend. If you want to vary a little bit, that's fine. But basically, at least 2/3 continuing with the equanimity practice and the walking. And again, if you want to stay and sit some here, that's fine. And we'll come back and we'll again go into a period of mostly silent practice. So we'll have, again, we have these two stretches, morning and afternoon, which are mostly continued silent practice.